For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly serving of our assortment of non-league news, opinions, and dare I say, fact. Joining me for the first time this season on the show, although not the first time in this venue, bizarrely, is Mr. FC United himself, a non-league commentator extraordinaire. That would be easy for Vince Cable to say. It is Swampy. Good afternoon, Swampy.
Good afternoon, Tim. Good afternoon, listeners.
We like a little bit of a topical politics in there. Yeah,
nothing wrong with that.
Our listeners might not have watched the news this week, but you know, go back, have a look on YouTube. I should add, of course, that you are now our European correspondents. Although today, the power of the internet brings us together, you're back on home soil.
I am indeed, yes. The temptation of FA Cup week basically got the better of me. I actually was in the UK for FC's game on Saturday away at Guiseley. I flew back on Sunday evening, and lo and behold, Tuesday afternoon, I'm back. I came back to Blighty and look forward to some football over the next few days, and equally the weekend's FA Cup tie that FC United are playing in.
Well, it's an FA Cup bonanza today as well, so we're pleased to have you back. Have you taken in any local non-league games out in Belgium?
Well, I've tried to. It's quite difficult because the whole structure of Belgian football, there's two divisions that are the professional divisions, and then below that you've got two amateur divisions, and then below that you've got all the regional divisions. The two amateur divisions, there's no one really that local. I mean, the team really, I suppose, for me, would be Royal White Star Brussels. They were relegated from the B League into the regional first division, so to speak. But they're in Etterbeek and a little bit further away. So I actually have come this time. I'm a glory hunter, I've got to say, because I am following a team, Union Saint Gilles. They're in the Belgium second division, but they've won the Belgium League 11 times. So, you know, they're quite well established, but 1905 to 1931. So they've not been doing particularly well since there. But the sort of big impact from the Brighton and Hove Albion manager, Mr. Bloom, who's invested in the club. So they're currently mid-table. So I'm watching them because they are very, very local to me, and then trying to catch a game. And unlike, which is very interesting, unlike the UK, wherever I walk or drive, I don't see park football, you know, and that's the kind of thing that ordinarily I would just stop and watch. I've got to do a bit more investigating and perhaps stay out of the public houses.
Well, they're probably researching the aisles like you've been, I think.
Well, perhaps you never know, but obviously there's a lot of football in Belgium and a lot of academy good football, and Union at the moment are doing okay, and it's like, going to try and catch a few games and see where we land and see if we can find a really good semi-pro club that's quite local to me.
And obviously you're back over here though to watch your beloved FC United. But another topsy-turvy season, Tom Green stepping down, Dave Chadwick, another ex-player, he originally came in to oversee player development last season and seems to have taken on the first team manager's role, and now FA Cup, not an easy tie against Colne, a step four sides. Looking forward to it, or a bit of trepidation?
No, not really. I mean, just going back to, you know, the likes of Tom Greaves. I mean, you know, we interviewed him last season on this programme when he was the caretaker manager. Scored after not playing in quite a few times and got actually sent off to play in a couple of divisions below, came back against Stockport County, scored a winner, and then became the manager. He himself, I think, after about five or six games this season, just realised that the job, and his words were it was slightly too early for him, and he wanted to do what was best for him, best for the club, and best for his family. So he stepped aside. He's playing at Hyde. He's playing football still. He's at Hyde. He scored two goals during the week. So he's very much still a player, and I think he made the right decision. Dave Chadwick coming in as caretaker currently, doing a steady in the ship initially. First three games, he came in. Three good draws, you know, because we've only won one game this season. So we're looking at the moment at a selection process of a new manager, and maybe if that's Dave, it'll be good luck to him and his management team or whoever may come in. But going back to the FA Cup, yeah, I mean, Steve Cunningham, the manager of Colne, he's got a young, hungry, experienced team, though. They play hard, they work well as a unit. A couple of ex-FC players in there, including the likes of Chris Lynch, who plays centre-half. They've got a good a really good goalkeeper in Hakan Burton, who was at Curzon Ashton. So he's played National League North, as Chris Lynch has. And then a mixture of young and other mature players that are really doing well. The 25th in the division, you know, on 13 points, so we're just a few points off for top spot. And as I say, Steve Cunningham has done very, very well with him. Dave Chadwick knows him very well as well. There'll be a lot of rivalry on that touchline come Saturday. And I think we've got to approach it because there's going to be no fear from Clockhold because they are, you know, a team that are a few divisions below us currently. But FA Cup, as you know, Tim, anything can happen. We've got to go out there and perform ourselves. We're a young team now. We've brought in three or four lone players, some good players from Blackburn Rovers. But I noticed in the dealings that Colne have been having in the last few weeks, they brought in some probably similar type players that what we've got from league clubs as well. So, you know, they'll be being blooded in the rough and tumble of Northern Premier Division football, and we're doing the same with the Northern League. It's going to be an interesting game. Looking forward to it. I'm hoping that we win. We need a win financially for us. We need it as a football club. We're still not in the best of sorts, but we're coming out of it. Hopefully, we can get the results and you know, move further on. And hopefully, you know, by the next round, we'll have a manager in place and a management team, and you know, the club can move forward because uncertainty for supporters, not necessarily for managers and assistant managers or caretaker managers. I think supporters feel sometimes the uncertainty of not having a manager in place. But at the same token, you've got to make the right decision. And if you've got a caretaker that's doing okay, keep them in place until the time is right to bring in the right management. And that can only benefit the club, hopefully.
Interesting you say about the importance of appointing a new manager, because you've almost set up our next guest. So those clubs competing in this weekend's FA Cup second qualifying round. We looked at one of the big David and Goliath ties last week, where Lymington Town entertained Torquay United. Another Step 2 versus Step 6 tie is Billericay Town against Burnham. And after a turbulent start to the season off the field, it looked that Billericay may have been heading into this game without a permanent manager. But no more. Step forward the new manager at Billericay Town, an old friend of the show, Dean Brennan. Good afternoon, Dean.
Evening, lads. All right?
Now, I have to admit, I didn't see that one coming, Dean. Was it something that just came quickly and out of the blue for you?
Yeah, it happened very quick. Yeah, it happened earlier in the week, the last 48 hours, basically. So, look, it's I do leave him with a heavy heart. I was given an opportunity as a young manager, my first role really, 6.5 years ago, and I enjoyed every minute of it there. I'd like to thank Dave Boggins for that opportunity he's given me. We're still friends, there's no doubt. It was a really, really tough conversation I had to have with him. I had it with him face to face. I like to do things like that. And I chose to join Billericay and the ambition of this football club. And it's the next chapter in my managerial career.
It's great that you say that you have left on good terms, because you had a great time there. And it is a really close-knit club. And you mentioned Dave Boggins. I remember Dave Boggins 20-odd years ago when he first got involved. And the things that he turned that club around, and you know, it's still going places, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's a good football club. It's been left in with a fantastic structure. When I went in there, you know, since I've been there, we set up an academy. There's a scouting structure in place. It's got great location, you know, on the M25 and on the M1. It gives young, hungry players an opportunity. That was sort of the model there. But they're honest people. The supporters were excellent. Everyone was excellent. Whoever goes in there is going to inherit a very good squad. You know, realistically, I think that squad there is a top 10 squad in the National League South for me. Even though we've had a little bit of a bad run of late, we had a decent first four games there. But whoever inherits the job is going to inherit a really good squad.
And then you've gone into Billericay now. Our old friend and your very good friend, Mr. Dave Anderson, isn't with us today, but he has sent me a few questions that he wanted me to ask you. The first one being, what assurances have you been given by Glenn Tampling, the chairman there, that you're not going to experience the same issues that maybe Harry Wheeler experienced when he was manager there?
Look, I think Glenn, first and foremost, I like his honesty, I like his bluntness. you know where you stand straight away. I think it was important that myself and Glenn walk together, not where Glenn's not involved whatsoever. He wants to be involved. So I think that's very important. I like the way, like I said, he's very honest and very blunt, charismatic guy. He's come from absolutely nothing to make himself into a very wealthy guy. And I think the main issues for me is that I had all football control, which is very important. You know, with Glenn's help, you know, I think that's how clear it's going to be. Stuart Maynard comes along with me, who's my assistant manager at Hemel Hempstead. He'll be involved in the process as well. Some of my scouts come along with me as well. The physio comes with me from Hemel, and I think all of them things are very important that my people come at me, because that's what brought us to success at Hemel Hempstead Town Football Club. So they were sort of the assurances. We signed a three-year contract with no break clauses. I think that was very important. And that showed the confidence that that Glenn has in us. And we look forward to creating a very positive environment. I think we've got to create a little bit more of a hungrier group of players. We're going to have to go in a slightly different direction. There is a remit to bring the wage bill down. And I will do that. I think that's very important. We can't spend absolute willy-nilly and crazy. People are going to want to come to this football club to join us the way we want to play and to go where we want to go. And they've got to meet our ambition, and not just finances. And I think that's very important. And Glenn's allowed me to bring that over here, that philosophy.
And yeah, it's fantastic to hear that a manager's been given a three-year deal. Did that help sway your decision, because you're coming in with almost a slightly different strategy in, you know, bringing the wage bill down and bringing in different players? Was that three-year deal sort of the clincher for you that means that you know you can plan longer term?
Look, if I don't do the business, you know what happens in this business. You know, you get sacked. That's how it works. I ain't stupid. I ain't naive. I ain't working behind the ears. You know, I've got to do the business. The aim for this year is to get promoted. I can't lie. You know, that is the aim. But we've got to change slightly different things at the football club. Off the field, everything's fantastic. On the pitch, I've got to get the players in, hungry players that want to be here for footballing reasons. Within myself, coming and signing a three-year contract, yeah, I think that was important. Of course it was important. You know, I've a young family to feed as well. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, it gave me a little bit of security, but I don't rest on my laurels, because I know what can happen in this business. If you don't do the business, you're out. It's as simple as that, and you forgot about yesterday's yesterday. This business is about today and tomorrow. It's as simple as that. So that's how I walk. I'll do it the same commitment, if not a little bit more than what I did at Hemel Hempstead Town. I'll still get to the same amount of games. We've drawn up a list of players that we want to talk to and bring in. And I'll just be the exact same philosophy. That's what's got me into this position, and that's what hopefully can take me to the next level.
And you've never struck me as the sort of person that gets flustered under pressure or anything like that, but do you think there's going to be more pressure because it's Billericay Town? You know, there's probably a lot of people hoping that they'll fail. There is that sort of, you know, impression around non-league and beyond non-league, really. But you know, how are you going to cope with that additional pressure? Because at Hemel, you were the young, successful manager doing really well, and you know, a smaller club, not so much pressure. Is he just going to get on with your job and with those people around you like Stuart, and just move on and concentrate on the football?
There's pressures at Hemel. You know, the chairman wanted to get in the playoffs last year. I made sure we did that. You know, he wanted to get a home tie in the playoffs. That was his remit, and I got him that. So same pressure. I didn't do that, I might have lost my job there. There's pressure at every football club. You know, a week's a long time in this business, you know. So I like the pressure. That's what it's all about. Every year I try to improve on where we got placed at Hemel. And this year I'll try and improve on where Billericay want to go. We've got to do a little bit more in dominating on the pitch. I think that's very important. I understand what you're saying, Tim. I get what you're saying about, you know, people we're there to be shot at. Yeah, the opposition want to give it 10% extra. It's a shop window for them players as well, the opposition. But we got to make sure that, you know, we're matching that minimum. Minimum, we're matching everybody else's efforts, and the players are going to understand how lucky they are to be at this football club. You know, that's got to be the mentality. You know, Man United, it's the big clubs. That's where everyone wants to be. Everyone wants to be at the Man Cities and stuff like that. And you know, we're sort of that. We're in non-league. Let's be honest. You know, there's no point in mixing our words. That's what we are, and we want people that want to come to this football club and play the way we're going to play.
So a nice, simple first game in charge, of course. You know, potential banana skin against opposition several levels lower, Burnham. I don't suppose you've even had much chance to speak to your own players, let alone scout the opposition yet.
Yeah, look, I took training on Tuesday night. I wanted to get me teeth in, but we'll get organised again tomorrow. I've watched a good bit of highlights on Bournemouth today. The same preparation you would for any normal game that would be. The only thing with the Cup is a joint-killing competition, and it is a magical competition. But we've got to make sure that our desire, work ethic is on block. Now it's got to be spot on, and we've got to make sure we're at it. You know, and we get out of the traps fast. We know that Bournemouth will come and sit in. You know, they're definitely going to come and sit in. It's a massive opportunity for them lads at Bournemouth to see if they can hit the headlines. But we can only go one game at a time. We're really looking forward. I have to be honest, the welcome from everybody at Berwick has been fantastic. I'm over here, the club's here today. And it's just, we're just really excited, looking forward to the game. And the one thing in the Cup, you need the look. You need a little bit of luck in the Cup. I think that's really important. I've seen games before where the goalie's been man of the match and joint killings have happened. We've seen the Championship sides go out and on each sides. So, you know, we've seen that well before. We see Lincoln beat Burnley, the Premier League side. So that can happen at this level. We've got to make sure it's not our name.
And you mentioned you've been set a target for the league. Is there a target for the Cup, particularly with the additional money available this year?
Look, one game at a time, that's all we can do. We set for the division, we set a points target. And if we achieve that, you know, we'll reach success within the division. I think that's fairly important. We will continue to take one game at a time. With the Cups, anything can happen, you know. You could get a draw wherever, you don't know. We just got to make sure that when the Cups come around, we're focused, really focused upon that game.
Yeah, well, we always said that the Billericay job needed a man with great personality and great drive, and you came out of the blue, but I can't think of anybody better to fill the role, Dean. So we wish you the best of luck from everybody here, and hopefully we'll get you back on the show and in the studio very soon.
All right, guys. Thanks a million. Thanks for your kind words. Cheers.
This weekend is FA Cup weekend again, and the second qualifying round with a step two sides at National North and National South entering the competition. Who else could we start this week's show with than our very own Mr. Phil Annetts? It's at FA Cup Backfile. Welcome back to the show, Phil.
Hi, Tim. How you doing?
Well, good. Let's start first with your top line stats from the last round. I noticed one of them was Knaresborough Town. They'd only scored 6 goals in the FA Cup prior to this season.
Yeah, they've had a bit of a long journey, Knaresborough Town, to get to where they are. They played 3 times in the FA Cup just prior to the First World War, and then didn't play again until last season. So they had only scored 6 goals in all their FA Cup history, and they've scored more than that in total now this season alone. I think they're the top scorers of all the clubs who are still in the competition. Alongside, I think, Romulus, the two of them have scored 14 goals each.
That's not a bad aggregate score so far, and obviously they'll be looking to make progress in the next round. There's 80 ties in this next round of the competition. Maybe 80 rides as well. It could be very, very interesting games. What are some of your picks for maybe potential headlines come the end of the weekend?
Well, it's quite an interesting draw this time around, because normally when the National North and South clubs come into the competition, you get a lot of ties where they end up playing each other. But this year, that's only happened in 3 occasions. So that means we've got 38 matches where National League sides are playing sides from much lower down the pyramid, and in some cases right down to Step 6. So there's some very intriguing ties between some of the last Step 6 clubs that are still going. So you've got Atherstone Town, who they're going to travel to Kidderminster, which I guess is their biggest game in their history.
Yeah, no, I love the fact that that's the Harriers against the Adders. It sounds like
Harriers the Adders.
An old-school sort of natural world combat, that one.
Yeah, you know who normally wins that one. It's probably the Harrier normally. But we shall see. Atherstone have already upset a couple of sides to get where they are, so there's no reason to think they couldn't give the Harriers a bit of a scare too. We've also got Burnham from Step 6 who are travelling to Billericay Town. So there's going to be an adventure for them. Billericay obviously just got a new management team. So that'll be, well, it is another week just gone by, so no surprise they've got a new management team, I suppose. But that'll be an interesting first game if they lose that one against Burnham. I don't know what will happen to the new managers.
Well, we're speaking to the new manager, old friend of the show, Dean Brennan, later on at Billericay. Certainly one in at the deep end there. And last week we spoke to John Pyatt, who's another one of those. He's down at Lymington Town, and they take on Torquay United. And that was before we knew about the appointment of Gary Johnson to lead the goals. And then since then, as well, the BBC have also chosen it as their live streaming match on Saturday. Can't see much chance of an upset with Gary Johnson at the helm now, though.
Yeah, he'd like to think that he'd be able to make sure that Torquay United do the job. But they won't have been to Lymington Town before. It'll be a bit of a culture shock for them.
I have.
Oh, you have? Well, you're ahead of the game versus Torquay United then, so that's something in your favour. But there's a little bit of a quirky FA Cup stat between them. I mean, it is fair to say that as Lymington are at this stage of the competition for the first time ever, neither side has ever actually been knocked out in the second qualifying round. So, you know, one
history
of them is going to suffer
making.
That fate.
History in the making.
Yeah, that's right. And that same is true up at Chester, who take on their local rivals, City of Liverpool. That's another tie where neither side has gone out in the second qualifying round before. And I'll be going up there to watch that one, hopefully, weather permitting, get up to see if City of Liverpool can really give Chester a run for their money.
And another one of your fantastic stats that I did notice on your Twitter feed were Anstey Nomads, another one of the Step 6 sides in there. They'd never won before this season.
That's right, yeah, they're not alone, but they'd never won at all. They'd had three campaigns, and so this season they've already won three FA Cup matches to get where they are today, and they're facing Mikulova Sports in the next round. And if they win that one, obviously it'll be the first time they'll have a record where they've won more FA Cup games than they've lost. So there's an incentive there to carry that flag forward. The other club who's in a similar position is AFC Uckfield Town. They themselves, depending on whether they are connected to AFC Uckfield and Wealden from previously, they've had anything up to eight campaigns without a single FA Cup victory. So this season sees them playing their fourth game, and they've got every chance to get on Saturday with the form that they're on at the moment.
Yeah, and I've mentioned the introduction about Step 2 sides coming into the competition, and that means some super stats for you to have some fun with, Phil, as I witnessed on Twitter this week. It shows the ups and downs of football, but also the strength of the competition. The former competition semi-finalists taking part in this round.
Yeah, so first and foremost, we've got Southport, who made the quarterfinals way back in 1931. But we have two semi-finalists, as you said. One of them is York City, who was semi-finalists in 1955, who are hosting Ashton Athletic, who best they've had, I think, is third qualifying round. So it's on history, it's a very big mismatch. In league status, it's a mismatch, but they're playing together on the same pitch. So it should be quite an interesting challenge for York City there and Ashton Athletic. The other side that's had semi-final experiences even before your time, Tim. So way back in 1882, we had Marlow, one of the founding clubs in the FA Cup. They played in the semi-final. So they're the second team that have actually experienced the last four FA Cup activity. So
I've been to Marlow as well, but it wasn't 1882.
It was in 1882, a long time ago. Marlow, actually, they're the only club that's entered every single one of the FA Cups since it started in 1872. They didn't partake in one year because, bizarrely, in 1910-11 season, the FA lost their application. So efficiencies at the FA were just as strong then as they are now.
It's always computers to be blamed? Yeah.
One of the interesting to me, because I love these kind of stats, but in those 136 years, Marlow had never played a club beginning with the letter K in the history. And this time around, they're playing Kempston Rovers on Saturday, and that actually is the second club this season alone after they beat Kidlington in the preliminary round. So I haven't gone 136 years without facing a K team. They're now meeting their second one. You know, to get through there, there's every chance that Kettering could be just around the corner.
Well, I did. And Kettering, the team that you mentioned, I think the last time you were on with us, about their special stats and their staggering record of number of different opponents. Is it 181 this time round?
Yeah, they're adding another one again, even though they've already got 180 under their belt and it's far and away the highest number of different opponents. They take on AFC Mansfield this time around. So 181 different opponents. And again, if they win that one and they get Marlow, that will definitely be another new opponent for them.
And by contrast, you've got Stourbridge taking on Leamington, and that's their sixth meeting in the FA Cup alone.
Yeah, that's the only one really of all the ties where there's a significant number of past encounters. Leamington have the edge at the moment. I think it's 4-2. In fact, there's only about 8 or 9 ties in total where clubs are playing other sides that they've met in the competition before, which, again, is a lot lower than normal at this stage. I'm going to reach twice that size.
And again, I love reading your match-by-match previews because I learn something new every time. Yeah, Witton Albion, their 100th FA Cup campaign, and they meet Spennymoor Town for the second time in the competition. Is that an omen?
It could be. Not interestingly, clubs and celebrating their centenary in recent times have not done so well in their 100th season. But Witton got off to a good start in the last round. There's every chance that they could do again. They beat Spennymoor last time they met. Must have been, 2011-12? I think they won 3-1. So it'll be a challenge to beat them because it'll be a cup set if they do. But, you know, anything happened in the FA Cup, as we know, there's a good chance that they might celebrate even more on their centenary season.
So what's your cup set recommendation for the weekend then, Phil? Where should we be looking out on when those Twitter results are coming through?
Well, I mean, there are so many potential upsets. I mean, I highlighted Egham Town last time, and I think they've got another home draw against a Step 3 club in Brightlingsea Regent, and their opponents have never been this far in a competition before. So I think, again, there may be an opportunity for an upset there. But there's so many ties. I think there's 28 ties where there's a 3-league gap between opponents. And it would be wonderful if we saw at least one of those come through the other side to give us a real shock of the round.
Interesting. You've already told us where you're off to. Where can people find your stats, Phil, so that they can maybe choose their own club to go and support on this weekend of second qualifying round games?
Yeah, so I've previewed all 80 second qualifying round ties on my Twitter account, which is at FA Cup Fact File. So you can find them on there. And I will be posting them onto my WordPress blog as well towards the end of this week. So you can find FA Cup Fact File on WordPress.com. That's where I am. And I'm also on Facebook if you want to find me on Facebook too.
And you must be looking forward to this, the third qualifying round, because is it one of the smallest rounds? Certainly smallest qualifying round, isn't it? But no new clubs coming in.
Yeah, it is. It's just 40 matches, so that's quite nice in terms of what I've been dealing with over the last few rounds, as we talked last time. So it's a lot easier to handle and a lot easier to get my head around, and a lot less work to do between rounds.
So now's the time to send Phil an email if you want to reply.
Indeed, I can do other stuff for a change.
Thanks as ever, Phil. Look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. Looking forward to it. Cheers for now.
So we spoke with Dean Brennan at Billericay, a new manager hoping to avoid an upset. So now let's speak with one fairly well entrenched as a joint manager hoping to cause an upset. Some big ties and some big opportunities for the club to not only pocket decent money, but also make a name for themselves in this year's competition. One club hoping to do just that are South Shields, who take on Stockport County this weekend in the FA Cup. Joining us on the line, South Shields joint manager Lee Picton. Good afternoon, Lee.
Good afternoon, Tim.
Well, we'll talk about this league stuff in a moment, Lee, but the FA Cup, do you still have a sense of magic in the South Shields dressing room?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, we enjoyed quite a productive run in the FA Cup last season. We got through all the, up to the final qualifying round, beating the likes of Darlington and York, who were sides, above us in the Permitted Conference North level last season. So, you know, we're relishing the opportunity to take on Stockport County, obviously, you know, a real high-profile club, and I'm sure they'll bring a lot of support with them, and we're looking forward to the game.
Yeah, and a 5-1 win over Garforth Town in the last round. Is there a sense that you could go even further in this season's competition than last year?
I mean, obviously, you know, age-old cliche, we're taking one step at a time, but, you know, there's certainly a sense of belief within our dressing room, you know, between myself and Graham Fenton, the other joint manager, that, you know, we've got the squad, we've assembled a squad this year that, you know, on our day can compete with, you know, with just about anybody at non-league level. So, yeah, you know, we're going to have to be somewhere near our best on Saturday to get through the next round. A real stern test for us, but you know, we're certainly not going into the game with any kind of fear and trepidation.
Yeah, and obviously league-wise, champions last time out and over 100 points, I think, in your last three seasons. This term is always going to be more challenging at step three than Northern Premier, but how's it fair to compare to your expectation? Because you started really well.
Yeah, I mean, I've had experience at this level before. I was, you know, assistant manager at Blyth Spartans before I came to the South Shields, and I know how tough this league is, and you know, we experienced that ourselves, you know, the first two away games, you know, the first of which at Fargo Celtic, which we very kind of uncharacteristically, you know, lost our discipline on the pitch a little bit and suffered two red cards as a result of that. But also, you know, the game at North Serby on Bank Holiday Monday, where, you know, we just weren't at the races, and North Derby deservedly won on the day. So it is a league where, you know, everybody can beat everybody else, and you've got to be, you know, you've got to bring your right levels to each and every game if you want to get the right result.
Yeah, and obviously you lost Julio Arca to retirement at the end of last season. Has he been a tough person to replace, not only with ability, but I guess his influence on the field as well?
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, Julio's has been a linchpin for the football club, I guess, both on and off the pitch over the last 3 years. He's been an incredible asset to the club, an incredible servant for the club. And, you know, those type of players don't come around very often. What I will say is that, you know, in Phil Turnbull, who we brought in from Darlington to kind of almost try and fill that void that Julio left, Phil's, you know, over the last month has put in some fantastic performances, and you know, he's a slightly different player to Julio, but at the same time he's controlling that central midfield area for us really well at the moment, and that's kind of filled that gap a little bit for us.
And your success, yourself and Graham Fenton, has obviously been recognised as well, signing new 5-year deals at the club in the summer. Have you been given any targets for this season, either cup or league wise on the back of that?
I think, you know, well, our owner very kindly came out just a few days after we secured promotion from Evo Spit 1, and kind of publicly stated that he was kind of seeking promotion this season. But that, you know, that's part and parcel of being at a club like South Shields. You know, we've had a lot of success over the last 3 years, and the biggest challenge for myself and Graham is trying to, you know, live up to that, the expectation that has developed at the club. And, you know, that's a pressure we don't mind. You know, you'd rather have that kind of expectation where you expect to be at the right end of the table rather than the wrong end of the table, and you're trying to avoid relegation. So it keeps everybody on their toes, so they say. And, you know, but that is the target this season. If we can either automatically or through the playoffs get promoted this season, then we'll consider that to be job done.
And I understand that both you and Graham are effectively full time at the club, you know, mainly looking overseeing the academy. But does that give you extra time with the first team players if they're available? Any additional time, or is it just a focus during the week on the academy, and then as would normal? As a part-time manager, you just get your time with the players a couple of times a week.
I guess it gives us extra time in terms of, you know, us planning and preparing for what we do with the first team. But, you know, as with just about every other club at our level, you know, the players have their regular jobs through the day, so we don't get any additional time, contact time, physical contact time with the players, like, you know, over and above what you would get at any other club at our level.
And do you foresee that, you know, obviously if you're being not under pressure, but if there's an expectation to get promotion this year, is there then an expectation to maybe move full time in the future as a first team player?
It's something that, you know, that's been you know, talked about at a very, you know, early stage, and it's something that's going to be, you know, quite a while down the line if it does happen. We obviously wouldn't even dream of looking at that kind of model, you know, at the current step that we're at. But as you well know yourself, you know, next step up at Conference North level, there's already a handful of full-time teams, and I guess if your overarching ambition is to progress even further in Conference North, then to give yourself a, you know, a fighting chance of being, you know, promoted from Conference North, I guess it's something that you might have to look at it at some stage. So it's certainly not something that we're preparing for at the minute, but it may well be something that we're prepared for hopefully within, you know, I don't know, maybe 2, 3, 4 years, who knows.
And certainly, yeah, from what I can see from afar, that the club's almost ready to take that next step up. You know, you've got great facilities there already, but more plans revealed in the summer for a new stand, community hub. And it's all about building that community, isn't it? Which I guess you and Graham, being full-time at the club, helps build that spirit up at least.
Yeah, that was one of the things that we really enjoy at the club, the fact that we're there on a daily basis and we're helping to shape the club, not just on the pitch, but I guess across the board with, you know, with the owner and with the MD and the various other staff that we have at the club. You know, it's a real combined effort, and, you know, obviously none of this would be possible without Jeff Thompson, the owner, and everything that he's put into the club. But his ambition from day one was to build a football club that the community could be proud of, that the community could feel, you know, a massive part of. And we're taking small steps. It's obviously a long process. You know, when you look back at where the club was even just three years ago, you know, the club almost didn't exist. Yeah. So to be where we are in such a short space of time is a great achievement in itself. But, you know, we're looking at the longer game, and we're trying to build something quite special, hopefully.
And what about that, the dynamics of the joint manager? We speak to more and more joint managers now on this show. Is it a good cop, bad cop thing, or is it just gives you the ability to share the load, share ideas?
Yeah, I don't think we intentionally take on either of those roles that you've mentioned, you know, being one and Graham being the other. I think it's just a case of we had a long-standing relationship before we came to the football club. We worked together for the best part of a decade. We kind of know each other inside out. We know what each other's strengths and weaknesses are, and I think our strengths and weaknesses kind of complement each other quite well. And, you know, we communicate obviously often and, you know, well with each other. And we're generally speaking, touch wood, up until this point, there's not had many disagreements. Although, you know, you're always going to have situations where you don't quite agree on things. And then, you know, we have methods of deciding how things are finally decided. And, you know, obviously, up until this point, it's been a great combination, and you know, we've got no plans to make any changes.
Well, we look forward to seeing you be successful again this season. You know, Saturday starting out, is it a chance for an upset, or are you looking for maybe a replay and some extra money in the coffers?
I think the FA have made a great move this season in enhancing the prize money for the FA Cup. So, you know, they'll be looking to win the game at the first attempt on Saturday. I think it'll be a really interesting tie. We're obviously looking forward to a really big crowd at Mariners Park, you know, hopefully somewhere in the region of 2,000 or 2,500. And then, we're not going to be, you know, cocky or arrogant about anything, but at the same time, we firmly believe in the quality that we have in our dressing room. You know, we have a really kind of robust, you know, strategy that we've implemented and that the players all know their roles and responsibilities in. And yeah, if we can get our levels right, we'll be a real test for Stockport on Saturday.
Good stuff. Well, we look forward to speaking to you later on in the season, Lee, and wish you luck in the FA Cup.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, so the FA Cup so often means history to non-league clubs, remembering those cup runs of yesteryears, perhaps more than those more recent successes. One club with no shortage of history, and certainly no shortage of recent experience of being in the headlines, is Dulwich Hamlet. Despite promotion to the National South via the playoffs from the Isthmian League last season, it was a turbulent one that saw the club leave Champion Hill and move into a ground share at Imperial Fields with Tooting and Mitcham United. After a tough start to the season at Step 2, they toppled pacesetters Woking away last weekend, which seemed a perfect place to bring in Dulwich Hamlet manager Gavin Rose. Good afternoon, good evening, Gavin.
Evening, Tim. How are you doing?
Well, I'm good, and I guess you are as well. We'll talk FA Cup in a minute, but how have you found playing in the National South this season?
I found it quite a good challenge. I think, obviously, playing in the Roman League for so many years, you sometimes can get into sort of habits, and sort of there were times where we knew there were games that we could literally turn up and win, which isn't a good thing. And now we've been sharpened up a little bit mentally. We're playing against teams that are a little bit more organised, a little bit more resilient, and tactically a little bit better as well, which is no disrespect to the league we've left. So it just means that you know, we have to up our game a little bit more as a management team, which is great because I'd love a challenge. The players have to up their game a little bit more, which is good. So yeah, it's been good. It's been good, and we hope to start really acclimatizing well and trying to climb the table.
Yeah, I said you'd have a difficult start. You just hadn't got those results, did you? You sort of nearly got there, and then last Saturday, yeah, to beat Woking, who really had been setting the pace at the top of the table, that yeah, must be sort of one of those where you almost see like you're turning the corner, and it must. I've seen video footage of the fans and the players. It really meant something to everybody at the club.
Yeah, it did. I think obviously the fact that we haven't been winning, and as a club we've been used to winning over like more weeks than not. So it does sort of get a little bit of anxiety between, you know, maybe fans and players alike. And obviously winning a game of that magnitude against Woking probably create that sort of atmosphere after. But like you say, we've lost narrowly in games. I think Hampton and Richmond beat us fair and square. They were the better team in the day, and we really weren't anywhere near them on the day. But apart from that, the other games we've played in, we've been more than an equal to our opponents. And at times, we've been very unfortunate to lose games. Probably should have won. So we've never felt sort of like we were out of our depth, and always felt that we had a chance. And now our job is to sort of turn those losses into wins.
And obviously, the back of such a big win like that is perfect to set up for this weekend's FA Cup tie too. And the visit of the Tunbridge Angels, who themselves are in really good top form. They missed out on the playoff promotion last season, but I think unbeaten in seven and top of their division. Is that the sort of game that you want to go into on the back of that Woking win?
I think at the end of the day, we're playing tough games every week now. So this will be another tough game. But the good thing is that we're used to playing tough games every week now. And the boys are starting to get used to that. FA Cup will obviously, just for obvious reasons, be very competitive. And Steve's team's always competitive. And they've done very well at the start of the season. I believe top in the league and you know, doing really well. So we've got lots of respect for them over the years. We know it'll be a tough game. And we know we'll have to be at our best on Saturday to get a result.
Yeah, and do you prepare any differently for an FA Cup game, especially this season with the club perhaps in more need for the finances that the cup run can provide?
Not really. I think every game we go into, we try and take it as seriously as possible. Sometimes you can get sort of carried away with, you know, what the game means financially and stuff like that. But the truth of the matter is you've got to do your job on the pitch just like any other game. And sometimes you can do too much thinking in your head and not enough action. And we just want to make sure that we're concentrated on what we need to do in the game, carry out our instructions as been asked of the players, and we feel free to play as well, you know.
Yeah, and what about things on the ground front? My understanding is there's still like a legal wrangle going on over Champion Hill. It's just all gone a bit quiet. I think various people have sent letters to the developers, and it's just gone quiet on that front. Is that correct?
Yeah, it had gone quiet for a long time. I know there's been recent dialogue between the club and the owners of a lot more cordial nature. And we're hoping to sort of have some more, you know, concrete dialogue by the end of this week, actually. So, you know, I think for every party, the owners, the club in particular, even the council, I think everyone wants the situation to be resolved. And everyone can sort of come away from it in a positive light. If we all, you know, basically don't, if everyone's sort of not greedy and thinks about, you know, not only being looked after themselves, but also making sure that no one knows out of joint, really.
Yeah, and I mean, you do seem to have settled in quite well at Tooting. It was a deal done very quickly and smoothly, it seemed. But does that still affect the way that you prepare players, the way that you can bring players in because you're not playing at your own ground?
Yeah, we lost a few players last season who was in our squad that took us up just because of the distance of travel. It might seem like it's only a small distance from Dulwich, but there's a lot of traffic on the South Circle and up towards Turin. And, you know, to be quite honest with you, it does actually make a difference, even though the journey in terms of, you know, distance isn't that much. It's quite a bad journey. And if you're coming in from work, it can be quite a nightmare to get to. So we lost a few players that, you know, from our squad from last year we want to keep. And it was also attracting boys, to play with us this season was challenging. We lost out maybe two or three really good ones that just because of where we are. And that's, again, at the end of the day, is what it is. You know, we are where we are, and we're very happy and grateful that we're at Tooting, because without them, we would have been in a bigger hole than we're in now.
Mm. And obviously, sounds positive that there might be some positive dialogue going on again now, and you know, maybe there is a chance that you'll get back to Champion Hill. But do you know are there Plan Bs, Plan Cs, Plan Ds to look at alternative longer term options for Dulwich as well as just like the short term ground share?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of talk about some, you know, plan B, C and D, etc. But I think sometimes we shouldn't look at those too much as well. We should try and focus on plan A, because that's the best one for everyone. But there are sort of plan Bs and, you know, contingencies. And we've got, you know, because I think we're in a league above and we've had a bit more better sponsorship from the club, and we've got investors who have got, you know, a vested interest in the club in terms of the club surviving beyond this season and forevermore sort of thing. So I think as long as we survive as a club, we always give ourselves a fighting chance, whether that means, you know, we go back to Champion Hill, which is the great story, or, you know, we have to think about sort of finding a new home in the long run. But as long as we survive, we always give the football club a chance to thrive, and that's, and that's, I think, the probably the only plan B that we have, and that's what we're working on, because that's all we can see at the moment.
So there's other people working on plan A behind the scenes and off the field. What's your plan A on the field this season? Is it a cup run? Is it consolidation? Or is it even a push for maybe playoffs?
To be honest with you, I've obviously got in mind the best interests of the club. You know, as a club, we've lost a few on the gate because we're not a Champion Hill. So we can't push the boat out for players and maybe push a little bit more to try and see if we can, you know, really challenge the big boys in the league. But at the same time, we have got a squad that we feel that if we get everything out of that squad, we can still be competitive. And maybe surprise a few. But the main thing for us is that week in, week out, just to make sure we give a good account of ourselves. To try and win every game we're in and see where we end up. I mean, we can't ask for more. We can't really say where we feel we'll end up, or we know we don't want to go down. That's the minimum. But if we try and sort of do the best we can every game, just see where we end up, really.
Well, thank you as ever, Gavin. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Always calm in adversity as well. You know, it's not been the easiest of jobs, I'm sure, over recent months, despite the success on the field. And it's a pleasure to be able to talk to you and get some positivity from the club.
Lovely. Thank you, Tim.
Okay, time to head off to non-league paper towers for a roundup of everything else non-league this week. Joining us on the line is senior writer at the NLB, Matt Badcock. Welcome, Matt. Another week in non-league that even soap opera writers will struggle to write.
Yeah, another week in paradise. Yep, you can make some things up, can you, in non-league, but that's, I suppose, why we love it, isn't it?
Well, it keeps us busy. We probably have to start with the latest at Billericay Town. Now, we've just spoken with the new manager, Dean Brennan, formerly of Hemel Hempstead Town. Took me by surprise, not talking to Dean. I speak to him fairly regularly. But he takes Stuart Maynard with him, a three-year contract. Now, both him and obviously Glenn Tamplin, they're very ambitious. Do you think this means the chairman is now going to hold off selling? And, you know, can they go all the way? Can they make this Football League dream with Dean Brennan at the helm?
Yeah, it's interesting to see, you know, if what Glenn says about whether he wants to sell. I mean, I think when we spoke last time, it's fair to say, sort of wondered whether that actually would have ever happened. Really, maybe sort of this has reignited a bit of the fire in him getting Dean in. I think it's a, you know, on the face of it, it seems a very good appointment, you know, sensible decision. Obviously, Dean's success speaks for itself, doesn't he? What he's achieved at Hemel, and, you know, you can come across and bring a lot of, you know, those successful methods, and he sort of looks into opposition a lot and things like that. So he's completely clued up on the level and what's needed. Obviously, he worked with Jake Robinson before as well, didn't he? But I know Glenn Tamplin said that he's still going to be assistant manager, so it'd be interesting to see quite how that works. But I'm sure Dean's gone in with sort of an open eyes. And yeah, whether can they reach the Football League? I mean, I think it's so far off at the moment, and you've got to remember they're a young club in the sense that, since they're not a young club in years, but in the sense of since the changes and since Glenn's come in, and that sort of, if they can get up this year, whether they can or not, you know, some good size in that league. Obviously, Torquay have just brought in Gary Johnson, so you wonder if that's going to change around their fortunes, but we're kind of flying under Alan Dowson. But you do, then that next step to step one is a massive step, let alone from step one into the Football League. So it's 3 years, obviously shows that where they want to go, but you know, it's a long way in football, and there's a lot to be done before they worry about that, I'd say.
But then we thought that no one would want to take the Billericay job, and then it comes across as somebody that we both know very well, and actually, when you think about it, he's probably a very good fit there. So who knows what's going to come from it? Talking of ambition, I believe you've been working on a piece about Salford City.
Yes, it's all to come in the next few weeks, but and we'll sort of hopefully talk about it a bit more in detail as we get closer to publishing. But everyone's sort of got an opinion about Salford City, some good, some bad, and we've basically gone up there and spoken to a lot of people and found out really what's going on. I think there's a bigger story to be told there rather than just what people see from the outside. So it's hopefully what will be a really interesting look into what the club are trying to do and where they're trying to go and how they're trying to do it and all the other sort of bits outside of the first team. So next couple of weeks when I've got round to typing up hours of quotes.
That's the bit about journalism that you know, that we like to forget about. Yeah,
I know, it's great. It's great until you have to actually write things up.
the wonders of radio. Now up there alongside Salford, battling for that automatic promotion spot in the National League, there's Harrogate Town, who's still at the top of the table, and third place Leighton Orient. They meet this weekend. They're the only two unbeaten sides in the division. Is it likely that one of those records are going to go this weekend, or are they going to cancel each other out?
Yeah, I thought you were going to go with boxing us then, Tim, and say someone's always got to go. Is that what they say, isn't it? yeah, I mean, I've seen Orient a few times this year, and I think you could see the foundations that Justin Edinburgh was putting down towards the end of last season. They finished really strongly, and They've had that real consistency through the summer. They've not really added many, just James Alabi, the striker, and Dale Gorman as well. I don't think there's been anyone else who's managed to really keep that core of last year and that base. They let a few go as well, obviously, but they've started well. You know, they're just a really sort of solid team, and you can really feel the crowd getting behind them, which is massive. When you look at their sort of home attendances, and that can, you'd expect that to grow as well. But yeah, they've had a great start to the season. It's sort of very early days, but they've got to be happy with how they have started. And then Harrogate have been a real sort of, I suppose they're the ones that you call the surprise package, aren't they? When a club comes up, there's always somebody who comes up flying and starts really well, and that's been Harrogate. It's been fantastic. I don't think they've added too many themselves either. It says a lot about what you can do if you have consistency in your squad. And Simon Weaver's been doing a great job there, and they've been pushing on the door of another forward-thinking club, aren't they? Went full-time last year in the National League North, and they've got their 3G pitch and trying to engage in the community. But they're doing it on the first team on a Saturday as well, and that's a really really intriguing one. That's one of our star games in Sunday's paper, with good reason.
And do you think, could Harrogate do the double this season and go up, double promotion?
Could they? I don't know. I mean, well, I think last year when Macclesfield were going well, and it was like, well, you know, they'll fall away eventually. And then we said the same as Sutton. It's like, yeah, well, you know, Sutton are going great, but it won't last. And maybe we sort of disrespected those teams a little bit by thinking that they would fall away eventually. So I don't see why they can't keep going. I still think, you know, Salford really seem to be getting in their stride, and Orient, as we've just mentioned, sort of really, I think, going to have a big say in where the title goes. But I can see them, when you get a good start like this, you can see clubs really can build on it and push forward now into this sort of next part of the season and establish themselves up there and then keep themselves in that playoff race, definitely, because with the extra two places that came in last season, it's really sort of opened it all out, and it gives everyone that chance and reason to believe.
Yeah, something to be said about momentum, and also, as you say, the squads have been together for a while. Now, staying in the National League, but the other end of the table, we've got Dagenham and Redbridge. They're hovering just above the drop zone, but news at the very end of last week of finally some new overseas investors. They've got a track record in American football, or American soccer, rather than try not to confuse people. And Tim Howard, I think it was touted a bit of clickbait there as a Manchester United goalkeeper, I think probably better known as an Everton goalkeeper. He's part of this consortium, and they've been involved in football in Memphis, Tennessee, I believe.
And they've been involved in baseball as well, haven't they? It sort of seems to be what we, I suppose, you determine as sort of more the grassroots sort of level. So I think I'm sure Dagenham fans will be more than happy with the news that they've been taken over, and it seems that their future seems a bit more secure now, because it's obviously been a very difficult time. I think the fans will want to really hear what this new consortium's plans are for their club and what their visions are. And it'll be interesting to actually hear that when they're next over, and it can sit down and explain to the fans what they want, because that's the most important thing. I know Dagenham, they're run by a committee, aren't they? So you hope that the committee have got in the right people and people who've got a vision for the club. I mean, it's also great news for Peter Taylor, the manager, as well, isn't it? Because I know a lot of the players have all been on contracts really to the end of the season, and maybe they can actually start looking forward a little bit more now. They lost a lot of players from last season when the money came out, and the players I spoke to, and they didn't find it easy in those circumstances, when a lot of their players, when a lot of their teammates were leaving, and they were looking good for a playoff push, and then it all fell away. But hopefully they can sort of get moving back in the right direction. Now, they've had a sort of difficult start to the season, but they've not been beaten in a little while, have they? So hopefully it's onwards and upwards for them.
Yeah, it was an interesting, maybe because of their US consortium, but there was a whole media pack of who was involved and who this consortium is, and they seem to cover every base, you know, the lawyers, the accountants, the sports agents. It almost, if you could buy off the shelf, if you wanted to find some new buyers for your club, on paper they look perfect.
Yeah, definitely. It looks like it could be a really, really good fit. I think again, it's just sort of getting that bit of detail from the fans, getting that detail of where they really see the club going, and it's got to be realistic. I mean, it's very easy to come in and start saying, oh, we want to be in Football League and League One in 10 years, all this sort of thing. But how are you going to get there? How are you going to do it? And I'm sure that, you know, judging from many of the other sort of American consortiums that have taken over, and remember, Orient were taken over by some American investors, you know, that they all seem to be very engaged with the fan base, and that's obviously going to be important going forward at Dagenham.
And then, you know, a bit further afield, you've got Hereford advertising for somebody with Football League or National League experience after sacking Peter Beadle last week. And Beadle and Steve Jenkins, they put out I call it a thanks statement this week, which isn't criticising, but just stating their disappointment at their departure. We thought Billericay might struggle to appoint someone, but yeah, what do we know? Will Hereford get somebody with all those right attributes, that sort of experience? You know, obviously, they've got big support, but it's probably not one of the biggest budgets in that division, is it?
No, it's definitely not one of the bigger budgets in that division. There's lots of, you know, decent hitters in that league, obviously, with a lot of ex-Football League clubs. And I think maybe where people don't realise with Hereford is that they don't have quite that financial resource that people may assume, that obviously sort of carried them up. People assume carried them up the leagues, but, you know, talking to Peter Beadle last year when he came, they won their National Game Award Team of the Year, and, you know, he was sort of saying, this is not going to be as easy, this step up. I mean, him and his management team have done a fantastic job there, and they can really walk away with their heads held high. They quite literally couldn't have done any more in the league by other than three promotions and three titles. It's, you know, it's incredible. And if you look at last year, the Southern League, they're not only they've topped it, they've won it by a way when all of the top five got, I think it was 96 points, and more. So it's been a remarkable achievement. I think, you know, they can be disappointed that they've been let go so quickly. I suppose it shows where we are with football a little bit these days. But again, you don't really know the full story of what maybe is going on sometimes. But it was sort of, you know, sad to see, really. But I think, well, they can, of course, they can attract a high profile people, because people will be naturally be attracted to a club like Hereford and see it. What the club is what they see or appear, what it appears to be from the outside, they'll obviously find out. But it sounds like they're going down a different route, doesn't it, with a sort of director of football, and from the rumours, it sort of sounds like that might be quite close to happening anyway. So it's going to be interesting how they go with that new structure. But that is they're in a league with some big hitters there, and it's not a in you go at and straight up type job, really. It's not as straightforward as that.
And then a bit lower down, you know, more managerial changes. You've got Jamie Cureton, he stepped up as caretaker at Bishop Stortford after Adam Flint has left. Christian Colas has left at Staines with all those his backroom staff as well, by the looks of things. And one other big appointment this week, former Chester boss Neil Young has gone in at Marine. So as much as you know, big names are leaving, they're then quickly coming back into the game and getting pretty high profile jobs and being able to build again.
Yeah, it's good to see Neil back in a hot seat. I saw him down at Wembley for the National League promotion final. I think he was down there doing some radio work, obviously from the Tranmere side of things. You know, his contacts in the game are fantastic. I know how hard he works on recruitment and making sure he knows exactly who's who at each level, so that when he does come back into a job, he's ready to go. I mean, he's sort of had a little bit of a break from it, sort of ins and outs, hasn't he, when he's had a role at Halifax and at recruitment, and then he stepped into the dugout a little bit when Billy Heath left. But he's, you know, he's got great experience, and his record at those levels speaks for itself with Colwyn Bay and Chester. And if he can, you know, bring back a bit of that magic to Marine, they could be onto a good thing. I know one of our friends of the paper, Barry Lenton, sent me a message, an email at the when Neil took over, saying how pleased he was. And they've had a few too many seasons struggling away, Marine. So I'm sure Neil can come in and hopefully get them rising up that table.
Yeah, and a big weekend with the FA Cup. We've had an FA Cup special this week. And games like Lymington against Torquay United, they've appeared to have caught not only the imagination of non-league media, but also the more mainstream media. Last weekend, we had crowds of 5,600 at Leyton Orient, 4,700 at Wrexham, 3,300 at Hartlepool, and four others over 2,000 last weekend in the National League. Plus, we've got non-league day fast approaching. And yeah, despite all those curveball stories that we report on week in, week out, the non-league game's in a good place at the moment.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, there's always things in non-league that aren't great and can be better, but I think we're really seeing, you know, like you say, some of those crowds are just fantastic, and the interest seems to be ever growing in non-league football. I think that helps with social media and the internet and things, and there's such much more sort of scope for coverage of the game. There's lots more web space to fill, isn't there, rather than pages in mainstream papers. And I think
rather than page 399 on CFAX.
Exactly. And the BBC, I think it's great what they do, where they go down to these FA Cup games in these rounds, and I think we sort of should remember, you know, it's something they don't have to do, but they are doing it. I think it's great that they're doing. Obviously, they've picked out Lymington v Torquay for obvious reasons. It's a real romantic tie for Lymington, and this is really it. While we all see the first round and the third round as being really, you know, special days in the FA Cup calendar, these are big days for these step 5 and 6 clubs who've got great draws on Saturday. And you know, you look at Ashton Athletic, isn't it, who are going up to York City. I don't know if you saw the celebrations in the changing room when they got through their replay last week, and you know, all hugging each other. And you know, these are going to be some of the biggest games of the lives of these players, and it's fantastic. And I think we've got to be really proud of what we've got in this country, and I've said it before, and the non-league structure and how unique it is to around the world, and that it throws up games like this, Lymington v Torquay. It might, to the wider world, that might not seem like much, but that's a, you know, incredible day for everyone at Lymington. And on the Arkfield, we've got Dartford and things like that. There's so many great games, and hopefully with non-league day, that can continue to really shine a light on this level of football and get people more and more interested, show them that it's maybe not what they perceive it to be. The football quality and the enjoyment is much more than many people expect. The affordability is much better as well than football at the top level. And this isn't to say, you know, people should turn their back on football at the top level, but there's definitely a role to for fans, you know, non-league clubs to play in fans' lives on their own doorstep. You know, why always go and go to a big Premier League or Championship game when there's always a game 5 minutes from your own doorstep?
There's always a game.
Apart from last Thursday when I was in around Manchester, I couldn't find one.
there's an app waiting to be written there, Mr. Backup. Anything else that we can expect in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, so obviously lots of FA Cup coverage. We've got a piece with Harrogate, obviously, after their great start, as we've mentioned. So a little focus on Ossett United after Ossett Town, Ossett Albion merged last season. Or in the summer, we've caught up with them to see how that's all going. And also spoken to Gary McCann at Hampden. Obviously left Hendon after many, many years and moved on for a new challenge. And we've caught up with Gary to see how he's settling in at his new club.
Good stuff. Well, we look forward to reading that. And thank you once again for your time, Matt.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for this week. A big thank you to all of our guests. A big thank you to Swampy. Apologies for the few technical issues. And a big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non League Show. Make sure you tell your friends too that they can find us every week on Audio Boom. Also find our back catalogue on there. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Once again, thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA. JABBA.